Welcome to the Startup Addict Podcast. I'm Nick Swinburne. I've been starting companies for over 20 years now. I've had some big successes, like Zappos.com, and lots of failures. Regardless of the outcome, I'm still convinced there's nothing more addicting than trying to turn ideas into reality.
All right, episode 33 of the Startup Addict.
Old format still.
Old format.
We've abandoned the new format.
Yeah, you know, fuck that old format.
You mean the new format.
Sorry, yeah, new format, yeah.
One day.
Today we're talking about how to set your expectations. So if you have none, life is great.
Yes. What if you have one?
One, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's about right.
We've got Chad sitting with us today.
Yes.
Or Chad Hurley, as he likes to
be called. That's a great intro. I love that.
He said he's not going to contribute. He's not going to talk.
I have no expectations for this show.
Right now. Expect nothing.
It was actually quite a battle just now. He said, "I'm not talking. I'm not. I'm just going to sit here and drink my coffee."
Mm-hmm. And heckle.
But I don't think he'll be able to avoid himself. Help himself.
Avoid himself.
We're also freezing. It's like a fucking freezer in here.
Yeah, my lower jaw doesn't.
Dennis set up mirrors.
Yep.
Set up new mirrors
for those late night episodes.
Got himself a sweatshirt. Set the AC on 50.
Can you post the picture you took when it was one of the lights were off in here later, so people can see how spooky it looks?
Let's do the podcast like that.
You want to?
Yeah. Hold on.
No. What are you talking about?
After dark.
Wait. Where?
Now we are in the dark.
Yeah.
Everyone has a red glow. To
everyone who's listening is like, "What? I don't understand what happened."
I'm so glad I came.
Hey, Chad, trust us. What could possibly go wrong?
Whose hand is on my leg?
Yeah, just come into this little closet.
Flip the lights.
Podcast.
Come into this closet with a red light and a bunch of mirrors.
It's like a set of seven right now.
So we touched on it on the last episode during my fucking rant.
Your raging rant.
About expectations.
Yes.
We talked about how we could do a better job of, or it's that balance, right? Of like, you don't want to make outlandish thing and come across as like arrogant, and you also don't want to aim so far ahead that you forget about the future and all that shit, but at the same time you don't want to do the reverse and not have enough ambition, and you also want to make sure it's not matched, right, where you're saying one thing like we're going to be the biggest fucking nacho company in the world or whatever it is, and then but you're not doing anything that would be in line with that, right? You're not hiring the right positions. You're not hiring the right people in those positions. You're not spending the right amount of money on marketing, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Like, you know, it's kind of like you're full of shit, right? but you're just basically hoping that this thing will happen. If I just keep fucking saying it, we can will it into existence.
Yeah. So how do you set your expectations? Or what are you doing in the process to set them?
I don't know. I think I've always kind of been a pussy. Oh, you know, funny side story. I shouldn't even be talking about this, but the other just right when I said that the other day.
Speaking about being a pussy,
we were driving.
Yeah, what? Yeah, what?
No, I was driving home from school, and my son, who's 10, was like, "I said something," and he goes, "Dad, stop being a pussy," and I'm like, "What the fuck? What did you just say?" He's all, "What'd you say? What? Stop!" I said, "Stop being a pussy," and I'm like, "Dude, like." You can't fucking say that. You can't say that.
He's nice,
like,
Nick. So how hard did you passed on?
Yeah. How hard did you choke him?
I'm like, what the hell? I'm like, dude, I was like, you know, that's like a swear word. What are you saying? And he's like, I didn't know. You tell me that all the time. And I'm like, and I'm like, there's no fucking way that I have ever said that to you. He's like, you say that to me all the time. And I'm like, tripping out because I'm like, what? I mean, do I not even remember like life? Like, there's no fucking way I've ever said that to you. And he's all.
He pulls out his iPhone. He's like, "I'm gonna play these. I'm gonna play all these pieces back for you, Dad."
Yeah. So he's like, and I'm like, "Wait a minute. I sometimes say when I'm joking, don't be a wussy." He's all, "Yeah, isn't it the same thing?" I'm like, "Yeah, not exactly." I go, "One, you could say at school, you'll be all right. The other one, you're getting sent to the principal's office." He's like, "Well, I don't know. I'm sorry, I didn't know." I'm like, "That's okay." He's like, "What does pussy mean anyway?"
Don't worry about it.
I'm like, oh my god,
it's a cat.
Like, I just wrecked the car. Oh,
like, why am I not recording this conversation? But I'm like, well, I'm not going to get into that. But in the context of what we're talking about, I go, it's the difference between if you called someone a wussy. That'd be like calling them a jerk, right? It'd be mean, but you could do it. If you call someone the other word, it'd be like the equivalent of calling them an a-hole, which you know you're not allowed to say. And he'd be like, okay, oh, I didn't know. I thought they were the same. He goes, because sometimes on the cartoons, they'll be like, stop being a pussycat. I'm like, well, I don't know. Yeah. But I was like horrified for a second. I'm like, fuck. Anyways, I don't know what I was talking about. But no, I think I have a hard time putting out there a big goal. Yeah. Right? I don't know why. I don't know if it's because like you don't want to set yourself up to fail, or maybe it's because I can't connect the dots. Right? So it just feels silly to say this thing when in my brain I haven't even connected the dots of how we would possibly get there. But that since last week or 2 weeks ago, however the fucking long ago it was, it's got me really trying to figure that out. Like, all right, with these new projects, what are we gonna do? And what is the right way to set these expectations? What's the right way to, when we hire someone, to what are we doing? Where are we going? How are we gonna get there?
So how do you do it? Do you shoot really high or?
Well, I just told you I have no fucking idea. I was well, just,
you know, how are you gonna approach
it? I just realized that I don't know. I don't know. I think you have to. You got to figure out what you want, right? And then you got to be honest with yourself in that regard. So for me, I always be like, I just want this little small little thing to fuck around with. But like, that's maybe not what I really want. So it's just this weird analyze. Like, no, I want big things. But I think for me, I just realize it's more being thorough, just understanding the steps. If you can connect the dots, then it doesn't seem that far away. It doesn't seem that crazy to say it. But if you just have an idea and you want to say like, oh, it's gonna be the biggest thing ever, that's not right. Now, Chad, what do you think about this? Let's see. Do we have any kind of drum roll? Before something brilliant? Do we have?
Oh, you can't set it up. You can't have any expectations.
That's true.
For me, I try not to think about the expectations. I mean, when you start a new project, you have to have an idea, something you're passionate about, something you care about that you want to work on. And in the back of your mind, outwardly you just try to be modest about it, but internally you're trying to think, yeah, this is going to be the biggest thing ever. With all the projects I've worked in the past, that's how we've always done it. Okay, we're going to build this product. We're just going to keep working on it every day. We're going to tell everybody, it's not a big deal. We're just going to continue to attack this one problem. In the back of my mind, it's like, yeah, we want to go public. We want to take this little project and turn it into something bigger.
Did you make any outlandish like comments to the press where you read where in, at the on no, the way up or?
Well, I mean, the press sort of there's so much attention on us, and over time, as we knew it was going to turn into something, you could talk about how optimistic you are and how confident you are, and just. That we're going to be the biggest video site in the world, whatever, or we're going to have the most music on our site than anyone else. But when you initially start, coming from PayPal, they were our expectations. We were going to build something bigger than PayPal. We were going to have a chance to go public, but we didn't necessarily talk about it amongst, like, coworkers or to the press. It's just sort of like, that was our goal in the back of our mind, and our kind of expectations is like, oh, we're going to make YouTube part of popular culture, whatever the hell that means. It's just like, it's just like a big lofty goal to like say you're going to be like remembered for something like that. But that's what kind of motivated us. Kind of that quiet internal motivation of like that's what we're striving for. But outwardly, just trying to be modest on how we communicate to the press and to others.
Do you think if you set your expectations too high, it gets overwhelming? Like if right off the get-go, let's say you're in a coffee shop and you're like...
I think so. Well, I think it's good internally to drive you to kind of have that internal goal, like motivate you. When people say you can't do it, you're like, well, this is what we're going after. Once you say it externally, once you start talking about it publicly, it can set you up for failure, disappointment.
Yeah.
So, I mean, as long as they don't know what you're shooting for, you can always re-level those expectations. but once you kind of publicly say, we're going to do this, like, we're going to go, every day it's like this grunt, you're getting pounded for like, well, you're not getting any closer, you're not going to do it. And, your morale, internal morale, everyone, it's what a lot of companies do, a lot of startups do. They kind of have this big launch, this big hurrah. Get a whole lot of downloads on the App Store. We're going to be the next big thing. And then, 2 months later, they're out of business. So,
I think the worst is when you, the few times where I got talked into doing PR stuff, and then you're starting a project, and I just hate now. I hate Yeah, going back online and knowing those videos are still out there and hearing what I'm talking about, I'm like, what the fuck am I talking about? Did I believe this at the time? Like, it's like this, but it's good. In a way, it's motivating because it's like, all right, you're going to fucking put yourself out there. You don't want that to happen again.
Yeah, but I think, yeah, PR strategies of the past have always been about, like, let's get out the door, talk about what you're doing, you know, hit the ground running. But now I believe a better strategy is going to launch your thing, get it in the hands of people who are going to use it, iterate, improve. Once you know you have that traction, that retention, you can be more aggressive in terms of your messaging and going out and getting hopefully real users, new users that are going to stay on the app and keep using it.
Yeah.
But
I think it's Zappos. I remember early on we put a slogan up that said, like, Zappos.com, the world's largest shoe store.
Yeah.
Right. And then we got a cease and desist from Nordstrom. Because they said, that's bullshit. You're not the world's largest shoe store. Stop telling people you are. And it was like, this is fucking crazy. What, like, how do you define it? Like, we could define it by reach. You're
counting shoes?
You know, we're all, you know, what do you define it? Find it. But we eventually decided not to fight it. I don't remember exactly what we switched it to. I think we switched it to the world's most popular shoe store. I just changed it to that. But I thought it was funny that you make this proclamation. And we wouldn't necessarily, we were thinking that's where we were because we thought we have it was actually true, right? Because we were doing dropship. So we had access to more shoes than they did at the time. But we got called out on it right away. So we had to change it to the world's most popular, which is funny because, I mean, they could have argued they were more popular than us at the time, but they didn't. They just claimed they were larger.
Yeah.
Was the point of that? Was they just trying to, like, take you down a notch? I don't know.
I guess, like, it was just a weird thing where it probably pissed someone off. He's like, they're not the world's fucking largest shoe store. The fuck?
Fire up the lawyers. Yeah. Let's get those guys.
What I think is interesting, so we talked about, like, your own expectations in the press, but, like, what we're realizing lately, something I think is super important to start addressing is, like, setting new hires and, like, employee expectations. Like, that's tricky because you want them to think big, but you also want them to focus on the now and, like, you know, it's a whole weird, it's a weird thing where I've had, we have a Basecamp. When Basecamp was starting, we had a different CEO, and the COO is the same COO now, Nick, and they had a presentation. So they would show to, I guess the CEO more had the presentation. So when he brought people on, managers on, he had this presentation he showed to them, which basically said, here's where we are today. Here's where we're going to be in 2022, right? And on the presentation, it said, like, here's how many locations we're going to have. Here's what our gross revenues are going to be. Now, full disclaimer, like, everyone should have looked at that and said, that doesn't make any sense. Like, if you take the gross revenue you're showing me, divide by the number of locations, it's more than double per location what the most successful location is doing. And it would be impossible because they'd be way over capacity. They wouldn't be able to fill that many members, right? But it basically got this idea of, like, hey, we're going to have this many locations. Actually, I think it was we're going to have 25 locations. We're going to be doing $100 million in revenue from those 25 locations. And we're going to make 15% profit, whatever it was. It was exactly that. But it was something along those lines, right? Yeah. So the studios are not set up to do $4 million in a single studio. The size they currently are, you'd have to make them bigger to get that many members in there, right? So what was interesting was, like, I get it, right? Like, he did a really good job of getting the managers fired up on, this is where we're going, this is how big we're going to be. I don't think they took into account, they didn't do the math quickly and realize, they probably didn't ask enough questions. Well, yeah. How much is the most successful studio doing now? Okay, how is it going to get to 4 million, and how is then every studio going to be at that capacity? But it was more just selling. I think he had a slogan on there. I didn't see this presentation until, like, 2 weeks ago. But he had a slide on there that basically said, you know, we're transforming the place. And then part of that was, so on the slide, it also said we will revolutionize or something, or transform the entire fitness industry. So it was interesting because it got the managers fired up. It got them to buy in, got them on board. We got a great team of managers. But it set unrealistic expectations because the numbers just don't add up. So even if they would have gotten to any one of those numbers, right? So if they would have got to 25 locations, they wouldn't have hit the revenue number he told them. Because then below that was also the profit number and then a profit sharing number. So they had their expectations based on, ooh, here's what I'm going to get if we get to this level.
Yeah.
But it was going to be impossible to get to that level because at 25 locations, you weren't going to get to $100 million in revenue. And at $100 million in revenue, you were going to need more than 25 locations, right? So, but did a good job of getting them, got them fired up. But what the challenge there is like, and so that was good, right? Other than the fact the math doesn't work, the fact that he said, hey, we're going to aim big. Now, the slogan didn't make sense with that because having 25 locations, $100 million in sales was not going to revolutionize the fitness industry, right? It wasn't going to make you the biggest fitness company. It wasn't going to make you... It was going to be a huge accomplishment. It would have been awesome.
Yeah.
But the...
I would be horribly disappointed after I saw that and then realized that that wasn't like... I mean...
Yeah, right? Now but like 25 locations, like the 25 locations, you're not changing the fitness industry, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but it was more of a... I understand the spirit of it and it wasn't to mislead anyone. It was just that was what he thought could happen. And it got him fired up. So that was great. Then the challenge becomes... whether it's that situation or any situation, now you've got this expectation. So people pick and choose the parts, right? So they go, oh, I'm this guy laid out a plan for me. And this is where we're going. Mm-hmm. And all we got to do is either get to these 25 locations. This is what we're going to get. This is where how big it's going to be. And this is what the profits are going to be. And this is how we're going to share in those profits, et cetera. So now, but then the challenge is, like psychologically, it's almost like you start... If you do such a good job of selling it, some people almost believe it's a given. It's gonna happen, right? So they start counting that money and they start doing those things.
And start spending it sometimes.
So that's sometimes that's an issue, right? It's been hard then. And then so say you would have got to, I don't know, half the locations and half the money. That would still be a big accomplishment, right? It'd still be a big win, but it won't feel the same because of the unrealistic goal that was set up initially.
Yeah, I feel like you've set them for failure. You set them for a big failure because if you can't, if there is no track to get there, and if those numbers aren't real, the expectation for me as the manager coming in now after a couple of years is going to be like, wait, like I built all of that on this.
So say they would have got to 25 locations, or they do get to 25 locations, and say average studio does a couple million bucks, right?
Yeah.
Or say it does $2.5 million, right? And they get to 25 locations, they're going to have. Fuck, 25 times. They're going to, well.
Take your shoes off, start counting.
Is that about 50? No, that's 50, about 60 million. But it's still not going to be 100, right? And if they get to 100 million, they're not going to have the same profits because they have to have more than 25 locations. But anyways, but it was interesting. So that was a good example to me of like, okay, so you got to do it all, right? You can't just sell people on this big picture, but then not have the steps along the way match up. And then I also think some of the responsibility trickles down to the new hire, where you got to take with a grain of salt or not take, you got to do your own analysis on what they're selling you, right? And it's like, and you have to take into account, okay, yeah, we're going to aim for Mars because we really want to get to the moon, or we're going to aim to the fucking, I don't know, whatever it is. But I thought that was interesting because I think it's hard when, it's hard, there's different, you need different people at different steps too, right? So the same person, who might be awesome to get you from 0 to 10 million is a totally different person than the person to get you from 10 million to a billion. So then it gets into that whole setting their expectations of like, well, what happens, right? What happens when they get you to 10 million and they've kicked ass, they've done a really good job, and now you have to hire them a boss because like, hey, but I've fucking kicked ass for you for like the last however many years, and like I did everything you told me to do and I got us to fucking 10 million on time. Yeah, but you're still not the right person, or there's a better person to get us from 10 million to a billion. Like, it's just weird. It's not really weird, I guess, but all these dynamics of like, how do you properly set these expectations? What happens, right? What happens if you find the person who's perfect to get you from 0 to 10 million and you tell them, hey, you are fucking Dennis, you are perfect to get us from $0 to $10.
Perfect. Boom.
But
no big deal.
You know, like, or do you, you know, because then they're like, okay, awesome, I'll get you to fucking 10 million. And you never told me I was the person to get you all the way to a billion, where it's a weird situation, right? If you say, we're going to a billion, you're in charge, you need to get us there. First step is 10 million. They get you there and you're like, all right, thanks. But now we're going to replace you. And they're like, what the fuck? Why am I getting replaced when I did everything possible? So it's always kind of weird.
Well, I guess that's just the way business is, right? You got to give everyone their expectations or their boundaries or...
Well, thanks for joining. I mean, should we just end the podcast?
Yeah. And on that note,
we're sitting here talking about hypotheticals and like, what would be a better approach? He's like, well, this is fucking
the way business is. The way shit happens, man.
Sometimes, some days you find yourself sitting in a dark room with red lighting.
I know. I'm freezing, a little weirded out.
What do you think, Chad? What would you do? You're gonna hire Dennis. You know, mm-hmm. like you want to get to a billion. Dennis is great to get you to 500,000.
500,000.
But he's not going to be the person to get you beyond that. Are you going to? What are you going to tell him on day one?
Yeah. Well, what do you say to me?
It's hard to like come up with something when we don't even know what business we're working on.
What are you talking about?
Yeah.
What are you saying?
No, I mean really, every business is different. I think you have to break down the metrics or the goals into something that's, you know, that people can relate to more than just money. I mean, if it was, you know, if it was around Basecamp, I would have made it more about like focus on like memberships or, you know, attendance or whatever, getting people in the gym instead of like this money metric. I don't know. Yeah.
They had the smaller metrics, but that was kind of, I wouldn't have done the, I would have asked at least, could I review the slide to make sure it all adds up? But
yeah, but I mean, I think some of that stuff, all the numbers in terms of the, you know, how profitable you're going to be, how big you're going to be. I mean, I think that's all like board type stuff or just like, yeah. I mean, I guess maybe it's important to the managers to understand they have more insight to the business, but it's sort of like try to keep them focused on the day to day.
That is a good point. So one other thing I learned, but there was a point in time where I said, you know what, I've only engaged with, you know, the way Basecamp worked was the leadership, whether Nick or Ramon, they kind of wanted to be the one, you know, they were trained for no wrong reason, but they were trained of like, you only talk to your direct report. You would never go talk to someone who's beneath your direct report, right? So if I'm the owner, and so say Nick, for example, he's the COO. Done a great job, but say he's CEO, he's like, I wouldn't expect you to go talk to anyone beneath me without asking me to, if you could, or coming with me, right? So I realized at some point, well, I don't really talk to anyone other than a couple people, because I don't want to, it's not worth kind of like, they've got this thing which seems to be working for them, and everyone, it's not just him, everyone knows throughout the organization, you don't talk to someone without telling the manager you're going to go talk to him, right? So I decided one day, no, come on, I want to fucking talk to more people. I don't know what's going on. So I sent an email saying, hey, I'm going to go talk. Okay, I just wanted to know more and get more info, right? I just wanted to sit down and brainstorm with like assistant managers and program managers. Hey, so what are the issues in the studio? What could you guys use more help with? Or are there any ideas that have come from within the staff or from customers that would be worth talking about, right? I was kind of like almost like a, it was a combination of things where I felt like I might be able to add some value. If I could hear some of these ideas, I might be able to find a way to help, you know? And then I also was thinking, I'd heard someone say, oh, he doesn't even know my name. And I thought, well, I'm terrible with everyone's name, inside or outside work, but like,
you're not special. Trust
I thought, wait, I thought, wait, I was trying, you know, I was, you know, I didn't want to, I thought it would almost like stress people out if I were to jump in and ask more questions, but I thought, shit, that's kind of, and I don't want to be that guy where someone working there is like, oh, he never stop and talk to me. He doesn't even know my name. Blah, blah, blah. Like, he's just only interested in talking to these one or two people. So I thought, okay, it wasn't, none of the people in the positions I talked to weren't the same person. But anyways, but we started talking, and Jim and I went to this meeting. We went to the first one. I said, I'm going to go to each studio and do this, right? And we went to Burlingame and we sat down. And what we realized during the conversation was, my idea was, hey, get to know me. Like, let's talk. I want to hear. I want to, you know, interact directly. I was just creating stress. Like, it was hard for them now, having that it hasn't always been that way. It was hard for them to come into this meeting and not think, like, what's going on? Like, why are we having this meeting?
Yeah, I mean, the owner
getting fired.
The owner who's not really spoken to you a lot. I mean, other than like, hey, how are you? Just said, I'd like to have a meeting with you. Yeah. We're going to come in and get some ideas, right? Like,
and I was more like, hey, just relax. I got no agenda. I just want to, you know, I had a couple questions. Like, you know, we had a list of a couple questions. Like, basically, it was narrowed down to any great ideas from members, any great ideas from staff. What are the most common complaints from staff? What are the most common complaints from members? Like, let's see if you guys just throw things out there. I don't know. If there's anything we could do to help them, that'd be great.
Yeah.
But I realized in it, like, it was A, stressing them out. B, they came in almost like they were prepared for a meeting. Even though you said don't prepare, it was hard for them psychologically to not try to prepare for something. And then you realized no, it was a good thing. They're like, no, we're really, we're happy. Like, you know, Nick and the other Nick and the team down, they do a really good job of setting our expectations. I know exactly what I'll be judged on. I'm happy, you know? And so I was like, oh, that's great. You know, that's good to hear. And then he realized, shit, I kind of might be disrupting this a little bit, right? Might be distracting him. Like, they're happy with only having to focus on what they have to focus on. And so the more we would talk about, like, oh, here, you know, I just want to give you an update. Hey, here, kind of where we are in the investment. Actually, no, it wasn't them. It was a separate meeting. And then I went and met with each manager, and I was like, hey, I just want to give you guys an update. We've been talking to a lot of investors. I just realized you guys, I don't even know what you guys know, right? Like, Nick might be trickling stuff down to you, or, you know, relaying stuff to you, whatever the word is. But I don't know what you guys know or don't know. So I just thought it'd be cool to just grab coffee and let me tell you, like, from the beginning, when we first started talking to investors, kind of all the different people we've talked to, how, what happened with each one, and kind of where we're at today and what we're looking at. And even during the course of that, I realized they were happy about that, and they found it interesting. But it, again, was stressing them out, because they didn't, I assumed, like, they want to know everything. They kind of did, but it was impossible for them not to stress out a little bit, because they, you know, naturally they start thinking about, well, how will that affect my role? How will that affect my pay? How will that affect this? What will change? What won't change? And it's easy for me to be like, nothing's going to fucking change. You know, we're just going to get, as an investor, blah, 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 blah.
Nick the stressor is what we like to call you now.
So it was weird, because then I'm like, oh, fuck. Now I've reached out and said, hey, guys, I haven't talked to a lot of you guys. I've been only talking to Nick and Jesse, and I don't ever get to talk to you guys. I don't know what you're thinking. I don't know what they tell you. And so I said, from now on, I'm going to fucking, you know, spend more time with you. And then I went to these first couple meetings. Shit, this is not a good, you know, this isn't a good idea. Probably the more I talk to people, the more info I share, the more stressed out they get. So we went to San Francisco. We did it with the team there, but we didn't do the other ones other than just with the managers. So that was a trip. Was like setting the expectations. I always take to mean, like, more information is good, but it's really, like you said 20 minutes ago before I started fucking rambling. It's like, yeah, a lot of the stuff needs, there's a reason there's a board. It needs to stay at the board. There's a reason that, like, sometimes certain people have to just internalize the decisions and make the decisions and fill people in on, hey, here's what happened after the fact, but they don't need to know all the back and forth and stuff in the interim.
Yeah, and I think it, like, and we started off talking about expectations. I think it's moved into about more about communication. And no, but I think that's probably probably more important. That, I mean, the expectation is, the goal should be, the people back of people's mind is like, yeah, we're going to revolutionize, like, you know, gyms or, you know, fitness, and, like, let's go do it. That's our thing. But I think the thing that probably allows you to get there is more effective communication, like you're saying. I mean, if there's, like, this void of not communicating, or the people inside the company are sort of siloed and everyone's kind of doing their own thing, it's probably harder to reach that goal.
So. Yeah, I think it's trust, right? Like, so ultimately, why was I going around talking to everyone? It's partially because, well, it was mostly because I hadn't talked to them, right? But then, obviously, you never know when you're just talking to one person and they're passing that information on, especially stuff that could be stressful. Or I guess there was part of me that wondered, everything gets lost in translation. So is what they're hearing different than what I'm hearing? Or have they heard something that didn't sound right, which is causing them stress? And then, but ultimately, it was like, no, you trust that people, and they should look the same way, right? And they go, oh, man, who are these fucking guys in suits walking around this place? And, like, who is he meeting with, right? Ultimately, we don't have to know all those things, as long as everyone trusts, like, well, the same way that I trust that you're going to do the best job greeting the customer, the best job teaching the class, the best job selling memberships, you have to trust that, you know, I'm going to do the best job as far as making decisions on investors or partners and this kind of thing. And so I guess it's
a mutual,
it's trust. That little balance, yeah, of, like, just enough information to make people believe in each other, but not too much to, like, pass on each other's burdens to them, because I don't want to fucking, you know, I don't want the stress of, like, this customer is fucking complaining about I can't sell them, I've almost got them, but I can't get them. Imagine if they did that, you know, the same thing, and then you sat there. It's kind of the same thing in reverse, right? Everyone has their the tough part of, you know, the stressful part of their job, or the stuff they
why would you want to go back and forth, offload everything on them.
I'm fucking overly wishy-washy.
Yeah,
well,
that was expectations.
Yeah, I mean, Chad told us he wasn't gonna talk, and
he actually
the whole fucking time,
quite enlightening.
The bar was set really low for
last year. He set the expectations going in really low.
Yeah.
All right. Well, if you like what you hear, follow us on at the Startup Addict, Instagram, Twitter, _addict, and that is it.
Twitter or is just _addict now?
I think that's a completely startup different.
Underscore,
I think
sorry,
that's
completely startup underscore addict.
Should we do a contest? Let's do this. If we get, how should we set expectations?
Cash prizes. Let's do it.
All right, Chad, you decide. 1, 5, or 10. Pick a number.
1, 5, or 10.
Yeah.
Of what? What just, are we talking about? What are the? What's the
just
unit?
Pick
here?
1, 5, or 10.
I'll go 5.
All right.
Turn it up.
If we get 5 comments saying that Chad should be on every episode. Oh, okay.
I'm glad. Hold on. I'll give you one right now.
That was 500, I think.
Then he's it.
You're going to get 0.
And if we get, yeah, I don't know what to think. We can do. We've never actually gotten more than like 2 comments.
Yeah. So it's awesome. Usually the same
I'm feeling
person.
Pretty good.
So that's pretty good. So we've set the expectations yeah. with that.
And one of them just left. So.
Yeah. Julio just spamming his own expectations.
All right, well, we're out of here. Thank you for listening.